Welcome to episode 48 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. So you remember last time when we were interviewing the fabulous Michelle Lee Bernstein, author of Brioche Knit Love, 21 Skill Building Projects from Simple to Sublime. She recommended from her blog, PDX Knitterati, a recipe for lemon orzo pasta salad. So Booty and I both made that. And it's fabulous. Booty, you want to take us through it?
Yes. So you start off making a really simple but delicious dressing, which includes half a cup of lemon juice, a quarter cup olive oil, 4 cloves garlic minced or run through a garlic press, a teaspoon of salt, and half a teaspoon of pepper. I, of course, left out the garlic.
I put it in and it's delicious.
I could totally see why that would be good because this is basically a Greek salad with pasta.
Yes.
So I could see where the garlic would fit nicely with that. So she says for the salad, it's a pound of orzo pasta cooked, rinsed, and cooled. And she does have a note about this. It makes a lot. So you could use less of the pasta if you wanted to use, she says, 12 ounces of orzo or half a pound, so half the pasta. I like that idea. I think you could either double your goodies and do the whole package of pasta if you want to make a lot, or do half of the pasta package and then keep the goodie amount the same. And the goodies are,
yes, talk about the goodies.
2/3 of a pound of asparagus cut in 1.5-inch pieces. And what's brilliant is you just add these to the pasta for the last 1.5 minutes of cooking. So basically when the pasta is almost done, you add your asparagus. 1 14-ounce can of quartered artichoke hearts drained. 1/2 cup of Kalamata olives sliced in half, 1 pint of grape tomatoes whole, 3 ounces crumbled feta cheese, and 1/4 cup of pine nuts. So you're going to combine everything and toss. She says to toss with half of the dressing, store the salad refrigerated to let the flavors meld, and then add more of the dressing to refresh. She says you can use all or part of the remaining dressing as you desire. She recommends it with grilled chicken. I think any fish, chicken, tofu, whatever protein you want. I think I added the whole amount of dressing. I was afraid that maybe it would just soak into the pasta and get mushy, but it didn't, which meant that the leftovers were really good. We had the leftovers several days after, and it was still really good. I thought the pasta still had a nice texture. It wasn't mushy or...
Yeah, I think you definitely want to cook the pasta al dente. I love this recipe because it reminds me of a recipe that is kind of a standby for us, the Ina Garten orzo with roasted vegetables. It's in her Parties cookbook. I think my sister-in-law Gail first turned me on to this, so shout out to Gail. But it's very similar. It's got the orzo, but I love the goodies in these of the marinated artichokes. Well, what did your mother-in-law say?
She loved it. She said, artichoke hearts? Yes. And asparagus? Yes. Olives? Yes.
Yes.
I think it's a relatively healthy recipe. She only has 3 ounces of feta cheese. So you can always add more feta cheese if you wanted to. I forgot to add the pine nuts. Now, did you toast the pine nuts?
Or... I did. I added the pine nuts and I toasted them and kind of added them at the end because they have a tiny little bite to them that I think is really good. But
yeah,
it's like a Greek salad pasta, like you said. I think the one thing I would do differently, well, I definitely would have had half the pasta. And in fact, Ina's recipe calls for half a pound of pasta of the orzo. I think I would have done that and had the same amount of goodies, like you said, or doubled the goodies, because I want to get a bite of marinated artichoke, half an olive, a tomato, little bit of asparagus. I want that in each bite.
My mother-in-law did have something to say about them.
Oh, she did.
She said the title of the recipe is lemon orzo pasta salad. So it is a pasta salad, and therefore pasta should be the main ingredient. So
Does she listen to this podcast? Can we take issue and she'll find out or no?
probably not.
Okay. Yeah. She's completely wrong about that. Pasta is never the star of pasta salad, in my view. It should always be about all the other stuff. And then pasta is just the carrier of it.
Interesting. Well, we would love for any of our listeners to weigh in on this debate. I find this fascinating. I
Yes.
don't know. I mean, please weigh in.
Yes.
Oh my God.
What?
Breaking news of the Booty and Bossy podcast. My husband tried to take the cat downstairs, and this is the comeuppance he get. His shirt is soaked because the cat peed on him. That's what you get.
I
My
don't
dog.
know if that's quite as good as mom's bleeding, but I do feel like the cat peed on me. Is yeah,
Yep.
important
Okay.
news.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, moving on. I will update everyone as things happen over here. We are on to chapter.
Well, wait, I just want to say one thing. If you want more stuff and the flavors, like I love the idea of cooking the asparagus for 2 minutes in the pasta water. It cooks it perfectly. It's not too mushy. It's got a nice bite. But I think if you wanted a more intense flavor, the thing to do would be to roast the asparagus and roast the tomatoes and maybe like double the amount because they're going to shrink down. But that's going to give you that nice roasted, which is the thing I like about Ina's recipe too. But
Yeah, and if you don't want to turn on your oven because it's 500 degrees outside and you don't need to add to that, then it's nice to have both options that you
yes.
can do it either
Yes.
way.
And just to underscore, it does keep very well. And I did like her suggestion of doing half the dressing and then the rest of the dressing right before. I did do that. And I did find it had a little bit more lemon zing, I felt, than Ina, who just has you do the whole thing all at once. So I thought that was a really good tip. I like the flexibility of it. If you do want it to have more pasta, following the name of it, as Fanny suggested. Or if you want to just throw in a lot of stuff and have occasional errant bits of pasta, you can do that too. But it's definitely a summer winner.
Yes, it's great for any cookout. Bring out to your family picnic and your lazy river.
Or the
We
lazy river.
so just to remind everyone. Okay, so from episode 14, Bossy's Colonial Ginger Mint Hooch cocktail recipe that you can have while you're doing your lazy river experience.
Yes, we did just get back from a lazy river experience. The wind was perfect in Old Sturbridge, Massachusetts. We drove our car down to Route 20. We put in our inner tubes and we let the wind push us up to our road. And it took about an hour and a half. And I feel like I had a little mini vacation and it was perfect. But you know, I didn't do the ginger hooch. You know what I did? I had Debbie's killer sangria.
Ooh.
That was awesome. Yeah.
The killer sangria was from episode 42, where we interviewed Debbie Frabel.
So good. Highly recommend that. A summer treat. And the thing I love about it, about the orzo too, is you can serve it at room temperature too. I think it's actually better at room temperature.
Yeah, I
So,
think the flavors kind of.
yeah.
All right, we're going to give you three chapters because they are all related. We have chapters 9, 10, and 11 of A Social History of Knitting by Anne McDonald. And chapter 9 is Old Knitters in New Roles. This one is talking about turn of the century, as in the 1900. And it's,
Early 20th, yeah.
yeah, early 20th century. So she's talking about how women's roles have changed. For one thing, businesses have realized that 90% of the household money is spent by the women, which amounted to $10 million annually, which is pretty funny to think.
But
That is.
at the time, that was a lot.
Right. I think the big statistic there is the 90%.
Yes, that would be interesting to know. I bet that's still largely true. I think women still spend the bulk of the household economy, I would
That's a good
guess.
question. If another question for our listener.
If somebody else Google that and let us know what you find. Yeah, because we can't be bothered.
I'm just not sure how to get a good answer for that.
Right, because yeah, no, I think you're right. The percentage is important. But I mean, I think what's interesting about this moment is you have the transition, the industrialization means that women are not as responsible for making everything a household needs at home. So they are now purchasing those things. And yet, at the same time, in that post-industrial transition, women's roles are changing. We talked before about how they're golfing, playing tennis. They're also riding in automobiles, and they're even yachting. So they're kind of moving more, and there's this development of the leisure class. But at the same time, you have this rise of the suffragist movement and women fighting for the right to vote. I thought this was really interesting because I think it's behind this chapter. She spends a lot of time talking about the aunties who are the anti-suffragists.
Right, ANTI.
And they're the ones that are really promoting knitting and this whole idea of women as the queens of the domestic economy. And the suffragists are really not that keen on knitting. So you see this knitting sort of becoming this pointed stick. And I loved what Harriet Cahoon, she's a suffragist, she's a forward woman. These are the women that are promoting the right to vote. They're known as forward women. She says, quote, this is on page 181, a vast amount of drudgery is sugar-coated with economy. If you wish to knit lace because you have more time on your hands than you know what to do with, you are the very one the world needs, with your youth and your energy and your industrious spirit. Don't puzzle your brain over knit one, skip one, purl one, drop one. Drop them all. That's best. And so knitting for the suffragists is the thing that keeps women in chains.
Right.
It's the thing that keeps them at home and quiet and occupied.
And this is what I find really fascinating is that they're using this as a double-edged sword, that on the one hand, the anti-suffragists are saying, use the knitting to calm you. And the pro-suffragists are saying you shouldn't be calm or rise up. Don't just sit there and.
Drop all those stitches and go do something worthwhile.
Right.
Nobody cares about another lace bonnet.
Well, and I love that this, you said it was Harriet Cahoon.
Cahoon, yeah.
Yeah. But she's also saying that knitting is, quote, "Of all nerve-destroying occupations, knitting takes the lead. The ceaseless click of the needles and the muscular exertion combining to produce an exhaustion equal to the most vigorous exercise." Which the only time, honestly, my Apple Watch does not register any movement when I'm knitting. But if I'm winding yarn, then it will
That's
sometimes.
the only time you're able to hack your Apple Watch.
I have to disagree with her on that about the exertion of
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because McDonald spends a lot more time with the anti-suffragists because, in a way, they're the ones that are the promoters of knitting and their attitudes towards the suffragists. I loved how, and they have kind of two strategies. One is extolling the virtues of knitting. It's calming for the nerves and things like that, and that seems to be what Cahoon is taking issue with. But then the other is the stick of like belittling the suffragists. And I love what she says here about the suffragists. She characterizes them as a sisterhood of cranks who wear gray woolen underwear and number 7 shoes and whose skirt and waist don't meet in the back.
And we want to know number 7 shoes.
Are those big feet or little feet?
Right, because I feel like compared to my feet, those seem like little feet. But maybe at the time, those were kind of big feet. Did the shoe sizes change? So many questions.
Are they fat, and that's why their skirt
It
and
doesn't.
waist don't meet up. There's like a gap back there because they got the perimenopausal body. I don't know. And there was a comment too about how the suffragists are basically women of a certain age, that they are suffering from a mental aberration of a certain time in middle age. Women at such t a time ought not to be making fools of themselves on platforms or politics, but retired to the quiet or private life until they are in touch with normal feelings and sympathies again.
Oh, if only. Retired to the quiet life. Well, and I also love that the names have gotten better on the patterns. Instead of the cap for an old woman, it's now the bewitching breakfast cap.
Definitely want to make that.
Right. And so instead of the cloud that women wore for the buggy rides, we have a fascinator, and that's for the automobile rides. Hopefully, a little bit more secure, I would think.
This is the sort of carrot side. These are all the virtues of knitting. Knitting is apparently bewitching and mysterious to men. All those little embellishments are as mysterious to men as they are bewitching. So there's this sort of secret power. And then you can also use knitting in addition to calming your nerves. You can make things for your sweetheart. What better expression of your love than knitting some socks, some golf socks for your sweetheart?
Some very fancy golf socks. And we also had the unfortunate corset. There was a fashion counselor who advised, quote, "A woman ought to be slender. If that is impossible, she must at least look slender." And the corset was basically a way to do that.
To improve measurements. This is quote, "If the flesh is loose and flabby, they will compress it within reasonable limits." Because we all want our loose and flabby flesh compressed into reasonable limits, determined by a man who makes the corsets. "If it is hard and firm, they push it here and there as skillfully as a masseuse till it is out of harm's way." Because it's in harm's way before, and then you push it.
Out of harm's way, which I gotta say, the corset not having paid any attention to the Hippocratic Oath basically was the cause of a lot of harm because you have the corsets boning that would stab you in. Not that I've ever worn a corset, so what I know, but I've heard tell they're extremely painful.
Well, and they were trying to create the measurements and the illusion of slenderness. So you wanted a wasp-like waist. So they were
Right.
basically compressing the lower part of your rib cage. It was the Gibson girl look. So you wanted a low slung bust and then a wasp-like waist and then a high butt. And this was seen as the silhouette that was desirable. And they point out the clothes that they're making now aren't going to fit you unless you have this shape. So it's very important to have that shape. But yeah, women couldn't breathe because the lower part of their rib cage was so contracted to make that shape.
Exactly. And then moving on to chapter 10, we have the knitting for World War I, which includes, guess what? Trumpet sound? More socks. This was also really fascinating because we have a lot of contests for who can knit the fastest or make the most things. And you had gatherings where if you were curious as to what rich people's houses looked like, then you could go to these knitting parties. That was a good way to get into somebody's house and see what it looked like.
Rockefeller, and who apparently wasn't using his mansion, donated the basement and kitchen area. They're amassing these giant shipments to send over for World War One. And this is chapter 10, Oh Say Can You Knit for Sammy. And then chapter 11 is Men and Children for Sammy too. So these two chapters are all about the knitting that happens for the war effort. So you have this battle at the beginning of the century between the anti-suffragists and the suffragists, and then everything goes out the window, and it's all about knitting for the war effort again. Yeah.
Right. So now we have this big goal in mind. And I find it interesting that in order to knit very fast, it's helpful to make it into a contest. And here I am right now knitting on something that's for the 4-day knit along. This is an annual knit along I've talked about before with Marie Green, where she tries to knit a sweater in 4 days. When she designed it, she wasn't trying to stick to the 4-day thing, but she decided to test it and see if she could knit it in 4 days. And she did. This is a t-shirt, so it's not a long sleeve, big sweater.
No Sleeve Island.
It is in sport weight, sport slash DK, so it's not the heaviest yarn either. Obviously, whoever was in charge of getting the knitted goods knew how to motivate people.
Well, I have to say, Marie Green would not hold a candle to Mrs. Olivia Kindleberger's record of 10 sweaters in less than 7 days.
Well, and she also, I just loved that quote. It's on page 215.
Yes, she was the champion Red Cross knitter of New York.
Right. And when interviewed, they were asking, how do you do it? She says, "The way I work is this." I'm going to have a little accent here.
Oh, okay.
"I begin as soon as I have the morning work finished in my apartment. That is about 9 o'clock. I fix myself comfortably in my chair and I knit right straight ahead all morning until 1. Sometimes after luncheon, I go out to market. If not, I knit straight through until 4:30 p.m. In any case, I knit most of the afternoon until that time, when I stop work and lie down. I always lie down for 1 hour, often for 2. Then we have dinner, and after that I knit all evening, almost always until 2 o'clock. The reason for that is that my husband does not like ever to go to bed early and enjoys reading aloud. He is 84 years old, but he reads without glasses. He reads to me and I knit, and so we pass the evening very happily.
Yeah, well, you know what, Olivia? The reason you need a 2-hour nap is because you're staying up until 2 a.m. knitting. Who does that?
Right, and then clearly getting up before 9, even if it only takes an hour, still only 6 hours of sleep. Also, she says she only had one maid. So she doesn't neglect her children and her housework and her husband. It was like, yeah, I think the maid's doing all the work. Well, you're doing knitting work, and the maid is doing all the other work.
So let's just calculate if she's, it kind of reminds me of Virginia Woolf a little bit, who wrote from 10 to 1 every day. How much can you accomplish if you just for 3 hours? Okay, so she is knitting for 4 hours in the morning from 9 o'clock to 1. Let's give her an hour for lunch. Then she's knitting from 2 to 4:30. So we're now at 6.5 hours. Let's give her 2 hours for dinner. So after the nap, so let's say she's then starting up knitting again at 8:30 until 2 at night.
Another 5.5 hours.
Yeah, so she's like
12
knitting
hours.
for 12 hours a day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I would love to do that, and she did say something about having a crick in her neck.
Well, that was what some of them, and I love how they have this, the Navy League, and of course they've got all these songs and things again. Knit, 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 do your bit for the Navy League. There's one older woman at one point that says, "Well, I slowed down on the 15th pair of socks because my shoulder was dislocated."
Right. Slowed down, but didn't quit.
Yeah. And there's one woman who's involved in the, but this was so funny. She's trying to participate in one of these prizes things, but she says that the slowness of her work was due to her needles, which were made from fence wire.
Yeah.
How do you even
Yeah,
know?
there was somebody in Chapter 11 who didn't have any knitting needles, and that was apparently they were kind of hard to come by. And so her grandfather whittled some for her. And even though they were sanded, they were not the best for her. Still a little splintery.
But she endeavored to persevere. Yes.
Yes. I mean, and gosh, what size do you get? Well, you get the size of whatever the twig
Right.
was.
The Navy League sponsors this big knitting bee in Central Park in 1918. And you have all these Civil War veterans coming out again and saying, "I remember how to do this." There was even a policeman Patrick Fitzgibbons, who sang. He was the head of the chairman of the police glee club, and so he sang while he knitted too. So these were festive and patriotic occasions.
Yes, with varying results. I love that this one soldier sent back a poem which said, this is on page 217, "Thanks, lady, for the socks you knit. I used one for a hammock and one for a mitt. And I pause, dear lady, to ask you this: where in the hell did you learn to knit?"
So good. Well, and they continue the tradition that they started in the Revolutionary War of putting a little note in
Yes.
and explaining who they'd knit for. There's a very poignant moment when a little girl had knit a scarf for a soldier who was killed, but his friend, this is on page 236, found the note that the soldier had carried with him on a slip of paper. It said in a clear, childish hand, "Dear soldier boy, this scarf was made by a little girl 10 years old. I would like to hear from you if you have time to write." And so the soldier who found him wrote back, "You are only a little girl. but you have cause to feel proud because your contribution to the boys who fought on a foreign battlefield found its way to one who fought well and died well. I hope that you will find comfort in knowing you heard from dear soldier boy, even though he writes by proxy. That was so sweet. Imagine getting that.
Yeah, a couple things just wanted to touch on. One was the Arizona's governor
Yes.
who was a knitter and of course male all the time. He says, quote, "Of course I can get more done at home in the evenings, but I find I have quite a lot of spare time that I can use knitting at the office." I just
Only a
love that.
man could get away with that.
Can we all do that now? Because I feel like
Yeah.
also, when they had parades, they would show off their knitting in the parade. They would have a pole with the socks they had knit attached to it. And I think we should bring that back and we should all have parades when you finish, especially if you have two socks.
You'd have to knit socks, and I still want to do that. I liked the principal started a trend in Mapleton, Colorado, of the Rocky Mountain Knitter Boys, because he told the boys, he said, "There's these brave Sammies fighting to save our homes, to save our schools, to keep back the Zeppelins that any day might be coming over Mapleton Hill and drop bombs on our schoolhouse." Yeah. And he taunted the boys, "Would it be patriotic for only girls to do the knitting and the boys just to sit back and look on? Why shouldn't the boys learn to knit and prove themselves as patriotic as the girls?" And at
Exactly.
first, the boys like, "What do you think we are, sissies? Let the girls knit. It's their job." But he started to get them to knit, and then they became complete converts. And this was reported by one of the knitter boys. Quote, "Knitting's the best thing ever to steady your nerves. The boys in our room that used to sit and fumble with their inkwells or tap their pencils or tinker with their rulers or maybe flip bits of art gum at you when somebody was reciting are so busy with their knitting that they never fidget or misbehave anymore."
That was the best.
Yeah.
I do think, I mean, they talk about fidget toys. Like, this is the ultimate fidget toy, and you get a sock.
And you get a sock. How great is that?
That's
But
awesome.
it definitely takes on this whole patriotic element. And oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it, Booty. How many garments they said at one point?
Okay, so 232 is the. And she talks about that. So there's a contest, and the prize was a dog called Pershing, which was the offspring of a police dog that was serving in the Red Cross in France. And the winners, oh, here it is, were from Maplewood, New Jersey. 354 knitted articles, including 31 sweaters, 8 scarves, one helmet. Only one helmet, 31 pairs of wristlets, 75 pairs of socks, and 208 washcloths. Unfortunately, Pershing had a skin disease, and so they substituted with Sunny.
The princely Sunny Booty.
And they were thrilled, and they walked with him in the 4th of July. So you had the option of you could keep the puppy. Or you could send it to the Red Cross to work with its
Father.
father.
Yeah.
They did not send it to the Red Cross. They kept.
I wonder how General Pershing felt about a dog with a skin condition named after him and put out a surprise. Oh, wait, not him. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought that. I mean, so who wants a puppy?
Yeah.
We can have a knitting contest, and the prize is a puppy. And
There's
the
a puppy.
puppy is Bossy's dog, Toby.
Everybody would love a misbehaving husky. Yeah. It's the prize that keeps on taking. And you can knit with his hair, which he's shedding in great quantities right now. So it's so great. Yeah.
Right,
But
exactly.
I just find this stuff fascinating, though, and the how knitting becomes a microcosm for looking at these larger currents in history. And once again, we see socks, contests. When war comes on, it becomes the patriotic thing, and it's all hands on deck. So I'm interested to see what happens once World War I is over. So we will stay tuned for the entrance of the flappers into the knitting scene. But so, Booty, I think it's time to ask, what are you knitting these days?
Well, as I mentioned, I'm pretty much slogging along on my 4-day knit along. This year it's called Astro Pop. It's a very fun kind of retro pattern. Here, I'll hold it up for you. I am on Sleeve Island, which I'm going to do 3-quarter sleeves, so that's not too bad. I've got the first one.
Oh, yeah, that looks great. I
So.
like that. It's sort of a blue, darker blue yoke with kind of zigzaggy things around the yoke, which is very cool. And then a lighter blue body. Looks like it's mildly variegated on the body.
That's the same yarn for the whole thing. It's the Malabrigo Sisura, which is, I think, 50% silk, 25% linen, and 25% merino. So it might grow a bit with when I block it, but that's okay. I thought about blocking it before doing the ribbing, but it's so hard just not to just keep going,
Yeah,
worry about
I
it
don't
later.
think I've ever blocked anything before I did the ribbing.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, so once that's done, then I will be casting on for the halibut sweater
Oh, the
that I
halibut sweater. I remember a lot of people wearing that at Rhinebeck.
Yeah, we have a group of friends that are knitting it. Hi, Ellen. Hi, Cindy. Hi, Mary. We call and Ellen named our group the Fishies because they're actually a couple of people are knitting the salmon sweater. And
Oh,
then
I don't know the salmon sweater. I only know the halibut sweater.
the salmon sweater is also by Caitlin Hunter, and oh, and Lucy is also knitting it. So yeah, the salmon sweater is newer. The halibut sweater has been around for several years. So, and
Oh,
it's
okay.
but it's the same idea. It's the fish are sort of tail up, like the tails are framing your
The
face.
tails or the heads? I thought that.
No, the tails are around your neck.
Oh, wow. Okay. I had that completely backwards. You know why? Because I had this mental image of grandpa holding up a line of fish. You hooked the fish through the jaw or whatever. Yeah. And it would
Right.
hang up that way. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure why she chose to do it that way, but anyway, yeah, and it should be a super fun one because it's a lot of color work, so it's
Yeah.
definitely going to be do the two-handed method. It's worsted weight or DK weight, so it should go fairly fast.
What size needles is it on?
And
No.
I'm knitting mine on sevens, I think.
Oh, that's not bad. Well, I am continuing with my, actually, I don't know if I had started this, a sort of poncho serape for my friend Karen that loosely based on the glimmer pattern that we both made. I believe you made that in 2 days and I made it in 4 months. So, yes, but she wanted something that had more open work because I'm doing it in a cotton. Okay, so I am using a Debbie Bliss Piper white. It's 50% cotton and 50% viscose. Well, that should be kind of, but it's got this really nice little sheen to it. I think if you're going to make something white, this should
Yeah.
be nice.
And
And
honestly, I feel like, white goes with everything. White and black. Kind of nice to have. I didn't realize that not everybody wants to knit, especially a black sweater that's like all stuck in it,
yeah.
but it's very easy to wear.
Well, and it is good. I added the chain of open work, the original glimmering. It's basically got that side panel of the lace work. I did follow the pattern this time for the lace work. You remember that I invented my own one by not following the pattern. So I did try and follow the pattern this time. And I also put another little panel around the neckline of the same pattern, a little bit, a modified version, just to create more open work. And then I did a horizontal one. And I actually did swatches, Booty.
A trumpet sound, right?
It was interesting because I was using my Japanese lace making and trying to get ideas. So I was using my Japanese lace making and I thought, okay, well, if I make a line like this, and I did that first, this one right here, and I realized, oh, it looks just like a bunch of holes. And so I needed to frame it with a row of pearl. So I came up with that one after some experimentation. And that's the one that I'm using. But it was good for me to try them because I think I would have gone with the first one and then I wouldn't have liked it. I did an experimental swatch.
Yeah, and I think that that's exactly, well, especially of course if you're designing something, then you really have to do that to before you embark on the project. But yeah, it's fascinating how a relatively small change can make a big difference in your final product.
Well, and the other thing I was noticing in this one pattern is that it had a knit stitch through the back loop. So you create that raised knit stitch, which I like the look of that. But I had never actually done it purling through the back loop.
Which is surprisingly hard to do. It sounds like, oh, well, that should be all I'm doing. Nope, it does not come naturally. At least it didn't to me the first time. I think I had to look it up on YouTube or something.
Well, they had actually pretty good instructions in my Japanese knitting thing that made sense to me, but I really like that how that looks. So that was kind of a new technique that I had never done that.
It's very exciting
No.
making your own
Making
project,
my own little
making being,
project.
as Michelle would say, being the boss of your knitting.
I'm being bossy about my
Look
own knitting.
at
And yeah, and it
that.
feels natural and right. So
Keep doing it.
I'm just going to keep doing it. But I have to say it's I think I've done like maybe 10 inches and I'm like, "Oh my God." Because how long does that glimmer thing have to be? I remember the pictures of it laid out with the
It
cat
doesn't.
at the end of it, and I'm like, I'm this is it's the whole idea was it was going to be a summer weight poncho.
Your friend is pretty small, so I would say the church mouse one I think is around 50 inches.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I made mine for mom longer than that because she wanted it to be
Yeah,
more.
I don't think she wants it like super long. I think she wants it as almost like instead of a white sweater that you might wear in the evenings, you know, just sort
Yeah.
of something to throw over the shoulders.
Well, and I think that it might grow a fair amount as well. So that might be a good one to block before you decide you're done. It's
Yeah. I was a little worried about it looking like a doily because it's white and it has a lot of open work. So I was trying to strike that careful balance between knitting a doily and
feminine and pretty.
feminine and pretty. That's a fascinator. I'm knitting a fascinator.
Is it a
That
fascinator? Is it...
mysterious, what did they say? And bewitching.
Yes, you
Yep.
want to be mysterious and bewitching and not be old lady.
Cap for an old lady. Slippers for an invalid old lady. Yes. I mean, I do think we have gone far in now. We've got the bewitching breakfast cap. This is the bewitching, mysterious, doily-like poncho. Yes. Well, Booty, I think we covered some significant ground in the first 20 years of the 20th century and what was going on knitting wise with the World War II, and how even little boys were tamed into obedience and stopped throwing spitballs. definitely try Michelle Lee Bernstein's lemon orzo with a little bit of orzo or a lot of bit of orzo, depending on who you are and what you like. But you should make what you like and what makes you happy. And I think it's time to say, whatever you do, don't
Don't
knit
knit
like
like my
my sister.
sister.
But do check out our website and give us a review and tell a friend. Those are all things we appreciate, and enjoy the summer.